Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of...
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% off site-wide, plus an additional 10% off every order at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lengwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, especially the joy you feel when you share God's love with others. Indeed, it has been a beautiful day. A little warm, but certainly a beautiful day. As we do each week, I'd like to begin our program with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. As Jesus stood by an olive tree, he formed a living picture that the eye could truly enjoy. He stood so tall and straight. It was Peter who said, "Master, if only I were an artist, I would capture your image so that all might see and understand you." Jesus smiled and replied, "Peter, Peter, why would you do such a thing? Yes, I know an artist can capture so much, but can an artist tell the whole truth about any man who has walked the earth?" Peter thought for a moment and then said, "Master, will people in later times remember us?" There was a long pause before he said us. Once again, a smile appeared on Jesus' face, and he said, "Oh, my doubting friend, of course. Memories. Memories are like the waves. They come back to you." Then Jesus looked down at the earth and said, "Man is like a grain of sand." Peter said, "I don't understand." Jesus replied, "Man will continue to develop. His thoughts will be recorded, sometimes to irritate people, and at other times to give glory and honor to God. Peter, you will not be forgotten by the Father, because you do the Father's will. No man is ever forgotten who gives of himself to others. No man is cast aside forever, for he will come forth in stronger light at the end of time." Then he reached out, touched Peter, and said, "Peter, Peter, have no fear. For even now many people speak about us as they will in the future. They will remember you. and they will remember me. At times their words may be distorted. Everyone will feel as though they knew us, that they walked with us and spoke with us. But Peter, the truth will prevail. Then once again, Jesus looked down upon the earth, slowly raised his eyes to the sky and said, like a cloud, we shall drift in the memory of man. Let that be a source of comfort, Peter. Let it also comfort you that no man is ever forgotten by the Father or by others. A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in the introduction to her latest book titled, Know Thyself, The Imperfectionist's Guide to Sorting Your Stuff. God has created each of us to be just the way He wants us to be. If we can tap into the skills and talents He has given us, not only can we organize in a way that's sustainable, but we can also be the best version of ourselves. Instead of trying to mold ourselves to the tools and strategies we think should work, we can look for tools and strategies that fit the way we think and the way we organize. We can use our gifts, double-edged swords though they may be, to develop a life skill that saves time and energy and helps us to appreciate how wonderfully made we really are. When we are organized, we can find what we need when we need it. We have systems that work, and we know where things go. We even develop a sense of peace about our surroundings because we feel in charge of our stuff, not the other way around. Does all this sound just a little too good to be true? Then, in the spirit of full disclosure, I need to let you know that this is a process, one that takes time and effort. But organization is also more than a process. At its core, it's a feeling, one that ebbs and flows as we endeavor to maintain balance between the stuff that comes in and the stuff that goes out. It's possible to look organized without feeling organized, as anyone can attest who's ever tossed stuff into a closet when company's coming. To manage the stuff without creating a system, but when we do, we cheat ourselves. When we feel organized, we worry less about how we look and more about how we function, which is what makes the process worth the time and energy it requires. Those are the words of our guest, Lisa Lomester-Hess, who is a transplanted Jersey girl who has lived in Pennsylvania for most of her adult life. She's the author of two nonfiction books, Acting Assertively and Diverse Divorce, and two novels, Casting the First Stone and Chasing a Second Chance. And Lisa blogs at The Porch Swing Chronicles and Organizing by Style, and she is a contributor at CatholicMom.com. A retired elementary school counselor, Lisa is an adjunct professor of psychology at York College in Pennsylvania. Lika Hiss, welcome to Hess. Welcome to Amplify.
Thank you very much, Father Ron. Thank you for having me this evening. How are you?
I'm fine. It's been a beautiful day. I hope it has been over in eastern Pennsylvania also.
It has. It's been warm, but it's a nice sunny day.
What do you hope, in general, to accomplish with this book? A lot of it, I think, was revealed in my introductory remarks from your book. But say a little bit more about what you hope to accomplish.
Sure. A lot of times, people who struggle with organization lose confidence in their abilities to organize at all. And they think it's some sort of skill that other people have that they don't have. So my hope with the book is to not just look at organizing from a different angle, that is the angle of starting with things that have been our obstacles and turning them into strengths, but also being able to help people rediscover the confidence that they've lost along the way. It's very easy to look at people who look very well organized on the outside and think that they've got it all together, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they've got a deep drawer full of stuff, or they've tossed everything in the closet before company came, as in the quote that you read from. So it's a combination of things. It's finding that organizational way of doing things that works for each individual, because that's what makes organizing sustainable. But it's also a matter of hoping to get people to regain that confidence that they've lost along the way. Because that loss of confidence, I think, is even more upsetting to me as, again, the counselor piece comes out than the fact that somebody struggles to have their house look nice.
Yes, your book falls under the categories of both self-help, self-management, and the second one, religion, Christianity, Catholic. And certainly it fits the religion category, as the opening remarks indicated. And as we find out, as we read through the book and yet are helped to accomplish our life purposes by knowing ourselves, and knowing yourself certainly is critically important for all of us as it relates to who we uniquely are, uniquely created by God. Help us, therefore, with the purpose of our life, giving order to our life, setting goals, and also being able to determine what is really important, what gifts we've been given to give meaning to our life, and how we can be faithful to God's will. And so you begin your book by indicating that when it comes to organizing, there are two types of people. Tell us basically who they are. The simple way you say it, a type A, and then the rest of us.
That's right. I think when I think of type A organizers, I have a dear friend who has been an administrative assistant her entire career. And that's what I think of. I think of that executive secretary, administrative assistant, who not only has her desk looking precise and neat and tidy all of the time, but can keep track of her things, can keep track of her boss's things, keeps things running on schedule, and on top of it all makes it look like it's just second nature and it's easy. So that for type A organizers, or what I call type A organizers, those are the folks for whom this organizing stuff comes pretty easily. And they don't understand always the rest of us. They don't mean not to understand,
right,
but because this is a gift that comes easily to them, they look at those of us who struggle, those of us who have piles of paper on the dining room table, whose houses look more lived in than Architectural Digest spreads do. The second half of us, the rest of us, are very different in that respect, in that this is really something we've got to work at all the time. So the type A folks are the ones who I think of as the organization piece comes naturally to them, and then the rest of us are those for whom it might not come quite so naturally, and the same tools that seem to be universal tools don't always work, and they're not always the easy fit for us. Two of those that I think of often are binders and filing cabinets, that we think when I can't use a binder the same way the person across the hall from me can. That's the automatic go-to for stacks of papers, that there must be something wrong with me, when in fact there's probably just a better tool out there. The problem isn't the person, the problem is the tool. The tool should always work in our service, not the other way around.
And my sister's listening to this program, and she probably has a big smile on her face right now because she knows I'm a type A. And she loves to tell the story that this was years ago when I would come home once a week over the weekend, and maybe my mother and my sister were out somewhere, and there'd be things that they left here and there and everywhere. And so I would start putting things away where I thought they should be. And mother say, oh, he's been here again. Where did he put this? Where did he put that? You know, so yes, type A, capital A, without a doubt. Go ahead. No, please.
I'm sorry. I mean no offense to type A people. I think it's absolutely we are gifted differently. There are people who have this automatic sense of order and where things go, and it's something that's just second nature to them. But when you go a long time feeling like you're not one of those people, it's very easy to feel like there's something missing, that you're broken, that there's something there's a piece that's missing that somebody else has. And I've seen this. I worked with kiddos at the elementary school level, and I could see it in them already. I could see fourth graders who felt hopeless about organization. They were already slapping the disorganized label on themselves. You won't find the word disorganized in my book, and you won't find the word messy in my book. I intentionally avoided what I thought were judgmental types of labels. But we slap those labels on ourselves even when the world doesn't do it. And it's difficult to come back from that sometimes.
I'm also the first. I'm also the firstborn too. So,
so am I. So apparently, it doesn't go with
everything
I say.
And some of the categories that you developed throughout the book, and I'm just going to reveal them now, and then we're going to talk about them real soon. You talk about the personal styles. I love stuff person. I love to be busy, and I need to see it as personal styles, and then as organizational styles. I know I put it somewhere, person, the cram and jam person and the drop and run person. And you have a little quiz in your book so that we can begin to determine the kind of person we might be. But you indicate right away there is no right or wrong, and we certainly have to understand that they're not personal flaws. It's who you are. Say a little bit about the quiz.
The quiz is intended to just sort of give people a more definite idea of where they think they might be falling automatically. Very often, people can just read the styles and say, I'm that, and I'm that. And then the quiz is sort of validation, as it were, in some cases, although a lot of times people will find when they take the quiz, which is very unscientific, I must add, when they take the quiz, they'll find that they've got traits of some of these other styles as well. I often get the question, can I be all of them? And I think initially, as people pick up this book, a lot of people feel like they're all of them and they have bits and pieces. And my contention is that generally one of the personal styles and one of the organizational styles rises to the top, that certainly you can have elements of others. And because of the ebb and flow of life, as you told in your story with the waves coming in and out, and the ebb and flow of life in general, as we go through different stages of life, we see things come in, things go out, and things need to change as a result of that.
Let me add to this, again, let me amplify on this by reading again from your book titled Know Thyself. When we accept our styles and manifestations of our personalities and our natural tendencies, we can look at them in a different light. This change in perspective frees up the energy we've wasted beating ourselves up and allows us to expend it instead on finding practical solutions to our organizational struggles. By discovering the benefits inherent in our styles, we can use who we are and what we do automatically as a blueprint for developing a workable, sustainable plan. Best of all, since the basis of this plan is no longer who someone else thinks we should be or what someone else thinks we should do, we're able to celebrate exactly who God created us to be. Organizational challenges and all. We might even find a little time to give thanks for the traits we once grumbled about. And you're right, I hope that this book will help you to uncover the unique manifestations of the spirit that God has given you and help you figure out how to use them as your guide. The goal is not perfection, but rather a system that makes it easy for you to find what you need when you need it, to find what you need when you need it. As you get older, as you get 79 like me, sometimes the brain has a part of not knowing where you put things either. So it gets difficult from two perspectives. Personal styles, how we're wired. Let's begin there. We're going to take a break in about 2 minutes. But tell us a little bit about the I love stuff person.
The I love stuff person is a collector. What comes to mind immediately with this one is when my daughter was about four, she would come home from daycare with her pockets stuffed with mulch from the playground. Never did get to the bottom of why she wanted mulch from the playground, but she would pick this up and bring this home on a fairly regular basis. And I love stuff folks are the collectors of the mulch from the playground, the bottle caps, or it could be they could collect things that are of extreme expense and tremendous actual financial value. But they don't necessarily love stuff in a materialistic sense. It has some sort of meaning to them. For example, a lot of times the things that we have difficulty getting rid of are the things that we have some sort of an emotional attachment to. And the stuff for these folks is more than simply a matter of collecting more stuff than somebody else. It's hanging on to the stuff that has some sort of meaning to them. I have a picture in my office that my daughter did of herself, a self-portrait that she did in pastels when she was about 8. I could take a picture of this and I could throw the original away, theoretically. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of organizers who would suggest that I do exactly that. But every time I walk in my office and I see that pastel self-portrait of my daughter, it's a throwback immediately to her little 8-year-old self in a way that that photograph never would be. So that stuff, that right. piece of something is meaningful to me. And I don't categorize myself as I love stuff. I categorize myself as I need to see it. But for those who love stuff, a lot of times the collection is, they're their treasures. Just as my daughter's mulch in her pockets, for some reason, was a treasure. I don't know if it was her way of taking a little bit of the playground home, quite literally, or if she just was fascinated by being able to put stuff in her pockets. I never did get to the bottom of that. But the I Love Stuff folks tend to get an emotional attachment to their things. They're the collectors of the personal style.
Well, I do point out that it's possible to have more than one style. And there are three things to remember. Every style has positive attributes. A sense of humor is an important tool in the organizational arsenal, and also that it's a process. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back to talk about two more personal styles and then organizational styles right after this break. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Lisa Hess. We're talking about a book, Know Thyself: The Imperfectionist Guide to Sorting Stuff. We began to talk about some of the personal styles or how we're wired. And she spoke about the I Love Stuff person, pointing out that they're collectors. They have an eye for unusual treasures. And as a result, they become very attached to their things, which makes culling collections and getting rid of things very difficult. And the heart of the problem is too much stuff, not enough space, and their affinity for collecting often makes those with the I Love Stuff personal style very good at creating unusual and eye-catching combinations of items. And in addition, those with an I Love Stuff personal style are often, she writes, very good at finding creative uses for everyday things. Lisa, tell us now a little bit about the I Love to Be Busy person.
I've been doing a lot of conversations with moms lately, and I've kind of almost given this one a subcategory of I love to be busy / I am busy. And maybe I haven't chosen that, but I am anyway. And the I love to be busy people are the ones who are thriving on busy schedules. So those who actually love to do this are the people who sign up for everything. They're the kiddos who have some sort of activity planned almost every day after school. They sign up for a sport in the fall and a sport in the spring and a sport in the summer. And then they take music lessons and they do all sorts of things. And the adult version of that is, it looks very similar. People who are having a lot of interests and a lot of activities, filling their calendars pretty quickly. And whereas with the I Love Stuff folks, where we have too much stuff and not enough space, we have a similar problem. For those who have the I Love to Be Busy style have a similar problem in that they have a shortage of time in which to keep themselves organized. They may be very well organized, but they oftentimes struggle to keep up with organization because they are pulled in so many different directions.
And you speak of them as usually excellent time managers, because the things they commit to are things they genuinely love and or want to do. The third one is I need to see it person as a personal style.
And I talk in the book about how I am a work in progress. This is my personal style.
Okay.
The I need to see it. I beg your pardon?
No. You're revealing yourself is what I'm saying.
I am. And that's one of my things throughout the book, is that I'm on this journey with the reader. I've gotten a lot more organized as I've worked on all of these things. but perfection is still a long ways away. And for the I need to see it person is the piler. We are afraid that if we put things away, we will forget to do them. Earlier, I mentioned using binders, and I tried repeatedly to use binders as ways to store things. And so I would take my notes from meetings and things like that, and I would put them in the binder, and I'd put the binder on the shelf, and there it would sit and collect dust, and I would never look at it again because what I needed was inside of it. So we tend to leave things out as reminders to do things. We have a stack of magazines to be read. We have a stack of bills to be paid. And rather than put them in the drawer where it said make things look nice and neat, we leave them out where everyone can see them. I'm gesticulating as I'm saying this. We leave them out where everyone can see them, mostly because we're afraid if we put them away, it's not going to happen. The bills are not going to get paid. The magazines are not going to get read. Whatever the task is that needs to be done isn't going to get done. And we talked previously about type A organizers. Here, the type A organizer would step in and say, make a list. Put all these things away and make yourself a list. And for the I need to see it person, it's just not the same thing. We have lists. And they're on top of our piles. The lists kind of help us keep on track, but the piles sort of scream at us, take care of me, manage me, put me away, read me, pay me, whatever it is that needs to be done.
And then the organizational styles, you refer to them as our default settings. There are three of those. Tell us about it's the I know I put it somewhere person, the cram and jam person, and the drop and run person. Tell us a little bit about the I know I put it somewhere person.
Oh, these are the folks who put things in safe places. So when I've gotten my Christmas presents ahead of time. I'm going Christmas shopping in October because I want to spread everything out. I don't want that massive bill to hit me in the beginning of December or the beginning of January. And so I've started putting away Christmas presents a little bit at a time, starting in October, and I've put them all in a safe place, and then it comes time to wrap them in December, and I cannot remember what the safe place was that I put them into. It made perfect sense at the time, and it will make perfect sense again as soon as the person remembers what the space was, but there's that gap in between where they're running around like crazy trying to think back to what was the logic I was using at the time that I purchased this and when I decided to put this in a certain spot. So they've got a good idea. They know that things should go away. I love how you referenced earlier that each of the styles has positives to it as well as drawbacks. I mean, we joke about the drawbacks, but the positive piece that's here is an understanding that in order to be organized, we need to put things away. And I know I put it somewhere person has this piece. The problem is that they don't have a consistent plan so that things are always going in the same place.
I love your titles. They speak for themselves. It's almost like you don't have to explain it. Just you look at the title and you know what that means. Cram and jam person. Tell us a little bit about that person. That seems so evident too.
Yeah. So I think I want to start there with what their strength is. The strength of the cram and jammer is that they use space very well. Mm. So in some ways, it's beneficial to be a cram and jammer if you live in a small house or a New York City studio apartment and figure out how to use small spaces incredibly well. The cram and jammer does exactly as described. They cram things here and jam things there. And oftentimes using the same space over and over. But I think about elementary school kids in particular, because that was my experience that I began with for this book. These are the kiddos whose desks are stuffed, absolutely stuffed, to the point where teachers sometimes in complete frustration dump their desks and say, now we can see everything, let's clean this stuff out. It doesn't always get quite that bad, but the cram and jammers do cram and jam things. And the trouble here is that although, again, they've got that concept of putting things away and they've got the concept of a good use of space, the problem is that when we go to retrieve the things that we've crammed and jammed, they're often torn or wrinkled or broken or something else because we've tried to stuff too much stuff into too small of a space.
Drop and run person.
And that's my other style. That's my organizational style.
Yes.
Often that goes with an I love to be busy personal style, because people who are busy tend to drop the one pile of things and then move on to the next activity that they have to do. And it is, again, as you said, pretty self-explanatory. We drop one thing before moving on to the next. And the drawback to the drop and run style is that we don't always finish everything right down to that last detail. We'll finish it and we'll think, okay, well, there's this other thing I have to do, and I can finish this one last little bit of that thing later. And so we'll drop that thing and we'll move on to something else instead. And so they also leave piles in their wake, very much like the I need to see it personal style does. They are really good with, I say in the book, organizational sonar, that they can go back. If you've ever known anyone who can retrace their steps and find the thing that they want, or they can actually go through a pile on their desk and they can say, no, that was from Wednesday. I'm looking for Tuesday.
Right. Yes.
Yuck, that's drop and run.
My dad was that way. He used to save everything, and he had all these jars of little things on, you know, take a motor apart, take everything out and put all the certain pieces in one jar, other jars. He might have had 20, 30 jars there, but he knew where everything was. He knew exactly where everything was. There's no question about it. Tell us about the acronym for STYLE, STYLE.
STYLE is sort of how we can approach the organizing process. So the first part of the book talks about figuring out where you would land in terms of the who of organizing and the how of organizing. And then when we look at style, we look at how do we now approach this process of getting organized. And the first is to start with successes. One of the nicest endorsements that I got about this book came from a professional organizer who said there is no blaming or shaming in Lisa's world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've gotten that point across to the reader, I feel that a very high degree of success, because it's a wonderful feeling that people who have struggled with this feel that they can sit down and read this and say, okay, I don't feel like I'm being lectured at. I don't feel like I'm being told what to do. And so we start with the things we know how to do, we know are working well for us. As we discover a tool that works for us organizationally, we can continue then to transfer that tool over to other things. So we start with what is working. So often when we're feeling disorganized, we feel like we need to start with what's broken and fix it. But I would say that we do better when we start with what's working and we build on what's already working. The T in STYLE stands for take small steps. I'm a big proponent of just giving the time that you have to any task that's going to move you in the right direction in terms of getting organized. When we struggle to organize, very often we think we need to set aside hours upon end, an entire weekend. I like organizing. I write about organizing. I love this stuff. I cannot think of many things more deadly than an entire weekend spent organizing. It's too much. So if we begin with small steps, if I've got 15 minutes before I've got to get out the door to an appointment and I have a drop and run style, I can pick up one pile and sort through that pile in the 15 minutes I have. And I can see clear space on my table where that pile was. So in 15 minutes, I've got a feeling of success about my organizing, and then that tends to spur more successes. Successes build on successes. The why of STYLE is, yes, it has a home, a basic piece of organizational wisdom that I've seen in a lot of places and learned myself, is that you've got to have a consistent home for everything. If you don't, then that's when you end up with piles. I apologize. That's the royal you. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody.
Yes.
when we don't have homes for things, that's when we run into trouble. We end up piling them places, putting them in a safe place, cramming and jamming in a negative way. And so those are the times that we can't find things. My dad spent much of his life being a realtor, and he always joked in real estate, there's three things: location, location, location. And that same thing transfers to organization. What is the location for this item? Learning to put something in the same spot every time, figuring out where it belongs and using that space every time. My mom alternatively would say a place for everything and everything in its place. L for let it go is the toughest chapter for a lot of people. And I approach it very gently in the book, because for folks who struggle to get organized, sometimes that's exactly where the stumbling block lies, in letting things go, especially those who love stuff. And it's figuring out, how do we let go of things that we don't really need, and how do we let go of them in a way that's not painful to us? My daughter, when she was small, my daughter will be 22 on her next birthday, and I've seen her styles evolve over time. When she was small, when we would go through things and I would say, is this something that I can get rid of? She would very dramatically say, yes, but don't let me see you throw it away. I would be able yes. to throw it away, but not when she could see it. And that pretty much sums up the feeling that a lot of us have about letting go of things. She, on the other hand, was remarkable in terms of letting things go when she could give it to someone else who would love it as much as she had. So she was a kiddo who struggled with throwing things away, but did very well when it came to passing that thing, usually in her case as a small child, a toy, onto somebody else who would love it as much as she had. And we need to find the adult version for that. How do we, as we get rid of things, how do we first of all get rid of the things that we're going to be able to get rid of and not be sad that we got rid of, not get rid of those things that we have emotional ties to, and down the road we might get rid of them. She's pretty ruthless at getting rid of things now. How do we do that, and how do we get rid of them in a way that is true for us? For many people who are struggling with organizing and struggling with letting go, they've got big hearts, and they're really happy to fill up a carton of things that they can donate to somebody else who needs it more than they do, and that's how they let things go out of their homes. They can't throw them away, but donating them, that's a whole other ballgame. For others, yard sale is the way to go. Forget the trash can. I want cold, hard cash. Let's put this all up. Let's sit out and have a yard sale, and let's earn some vacation money. And then finally, E is where we're ending up. E is easy upkeep. And as we successfully go through starting with successes and taking small steps and finding homes for things and letting things go, we get ourselves to a point where we're able to then use the systems that we've created consistently, and we're able to use them sustainably. And that's my goal in the book as well, is that we're not just coming up with a quick fix for something. We're coming up with a system that we can sustainably use over time, which is why it's a process, because a lot of times it's trial and error. We'll try something and it won't work very well, and we'll be frustrated and we'll feel like we're back to ground zero. But we look at it and think, okay, but this was better than what I had before. Why did this work and why did this not work? And then the next thing we get is a little bit better than what mm-hmm. we used prior. So that eventually over time, we find the tools we can use across situations, whether it's home or work or the car or wherever we are, and that we can transfer those, not only the skills, but the tools as well, from one place to another.
And that acronym, STYLE, STYLE, as you just have so well described, start with success, take small steps. Yes, it has a home, let it go. Easy outkeep. And as I look at your book, I think it's a inspirational workbook in many ways, because you have prayers in at the end of each chapter. You have a section that you call Know Thyself, and throughout the book there are many exercises, many ways that are thought-provoking, so that we look if within ourselves so that we can find the organization that we might seek. And again, knowing that one style is not better than the other, just to know who you are and to be able to live with yourself and help others to live with you also. At the end of this particular chapter in the Know Thyself section, you write in part, God didn't give us gifts so we could hide or explain them away. He gave them to us so we could use them. In acknowledging our gifts and sharing them with those around us, we give him glory, because those gifts are ours through him. Do you know what you're good at? Or are you afraid that acknowledging your gifts makes you sound conceited? As you search for organizational successes, consider it an exercise in gratitude. Every time you discover a talent, say a prayer of thanks to the God who blessed you with it, and then put it to use to honor him. Couldn't say it any better. Couldn't say it And it certainly describes what the book is about. Even in the midst of Lisa's lists for a successful scavenger hunt, you write it to every home, office, vehicle, or other space. And I had a priest I was living with cleaning out his trunk in his car today. He was trying to organize things this very day. And other spaces, areas that are working. How many of these can you find in the space you're styling? Tell us a little bit about your success scavenger hunt.
Oh, my. Well, just being able to walk around your house or wherever the space is that you're looking at, that you're trying to get organized and find the things that are working. And in the book, I describe walking through my own house and finding where are the places that, where would I not send my guests? That would be my office, which I jokingly said the other day is where all things go to die in my house. Anything I don't know what to do with gets piled up in there. But being able to walk through the house and say, yes, I like how that's working. Yes, I like how that's working. Same thing in an office. If I look at my desk and think, oh, there are piles all over my desk, what's working? And maybe it's something as simple as the pencil cup is working because all the pencils actually made it into the cup. That may tell you something about your styles. Maybe you need something that is a simple one-step, and most of us do need a simple one-step solution. Things into that cup because it wasn't complicated to get them there. It was easy to pick up the pencil and stick it back where it belonged, and you knew where the pencils went. They had a home. You put them in the same place every single time. You were consistent, and mm-hmm. so that was working. And if we go through the house, it's very easy to find little pockets of success. And I know folks who struggle to get organized are shaking their heads and saying, not in my house. There is some place that's working. And if you can find the spots that are working and think about why they're working, even for I need to see it people, we need to use things like drawers and closets. So for me, if I need to use drawers, I will make sure that I subdivide them so that when I open up my drawer, it's an I need to see it drawer. I can see everything that I need right in front of me and neatly organized. And a lot of those happen throughout the home. A house that has a silverware drawer where the cutlery is set aside from forks are all together, knives are all together, spoons are all together, that's working. So I'm a big fan of finding even the teeniest, tiniest success and using that as the spark to build the fire that's going to burn in you to get organized and to be able to find a way that works sustainably. Quick fixes are a dime a dozen. And there are, I mean, this is one of those books, really? We need another book on organization? Aren't there enough of them out there? But I think finding the way that works for you as opposed to the way that some other person said is going to work is the way that we do it sustainably. We can do anything for 15 minutes. What mm-hmm. happens 15 days from now or 15 weeks from now? Are we still able to use that system? Sorry, that was a very long-winded answer.
No, that's fine. No. I'm glad that you're speaking that way because there's no way in even the segments we have in each hour to really finish what you've written in the book, like the scavenger hunt. What you're telling us to look for is one spot is organized to my satisfaction, one container that I absolutely love, one spot that's almost there organizationally, one container that I absolutely hate, one surface that's entirely clear, one spot that's working for someone else in the house, I guess, or where I'm working, but not for me, and then one system that I wouldn't change at all. So we're speaking with Lisa Hess about her book, Know Thyself, The Imperfectionist Guide to Sorting Stuff. We're going to take this break, and then we'll be back. Welcome back to the second hour of Amplify, where our guest is Lisa Hess. She is a retired elementary school counselor, now an adjunct professor of psychology at York College of Pennsylvania. She's written a book called Know Thyself, The Imperfectionist Guide to Sorting Your Stuff. So that tells you a little bit about what the book is generally about. And so far, we've been talking about personal styles. I love stuff person. I love to be busy person. I need to see it person, and then organizational styles. I know I put it somewhere, the cram and jam person and the drop and run person. And then we began to talk about an acronym for style. Start with successes, take small steps. Yes, it has a home. Let it go. Easy. Outkeep. We talked about start with successes. And now we'd like to talk about the second, take small steps. Tell us why it's important, Lisa, to take small steps in this effort.
Well, if someone has picked up this book, then chances are that they've been struggling to get organized, and it can be very overwhelming. So knowing that you can just jump in and start anywhere and start with the time that's available to you, I think is very important. And it's easy to believe that we've got to tackle everything all at once, but I know when I try to take on a very large organizing task or spend a long period of time doing something, I have a tendency to forget what I was thinking when I was doing it. And I think if we do it in small steps, a lot of times it sticks better. We encode the information a little bit better than we would if we were taking on an enormous task all at once. And I think it also provides us with momentum that allows us to keep going after the small step that we've taken. And the small step can be as small as 5 minutes. I have Give It Five in the book, where you set the timer for 5 minutes and tackle something, a nagging organizational task, for 5 minutes. And when that timer goes off after 5 minutes, you give yourself permission to walk away and go do something else. And often we have to, especially the I love to be busy folks. They may have an appointment they have to leave for in 5 minutes. But what often happens is that when that timer goes off in 5 minutes, we've gotten started and we're on a roll. And if time permits, we continue, because sometimes getting started is the hardest part. So if we can take a small step, that baby step into the process can lead us to much bigger payoffs.
So you're right. While it can be difficult to come to terms with progress that is slow, every small step takes us in the direction of something bigger. If we keep our goals in mind and set our sights on what matters, it's easy to keep moving in the right direction, even if it doesn't happen quickly. If we just keep moving forward, no matter the detours, the construction delays will arrive. And you have a list of 10 small steps to get you started. You write, organizing by style is all about progress, and small steps are at the heart of the progress. Which of these might you start with, and what payoff can you enjoy? Put away one load of laundry. Gather wayward items from one room and put them where they belong. Clean out one drawer, not the junk drawer, unless you must. Sort through one pile of papers. Clear off one flat space. Spend 5 minutes tackling a hot spot. Turn one pile into a list and then put the pile away. Make your bed. Fold and put away and or hang up clothing that isn't where it's supposed to be. Complete one task you've been putting off. And so even just reading this, I imagine people come up with even other ideas of small steps for them.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And I know that when I did small groups with elementary school kids and would give them the take-home assignment of Give It Five, even 9, 10, and 11-year-olds would tell me, you know, once I started, I kept going, and I spent the next 2 hours, and my room was wonderful when I was finished. So these are the kinds of ways that we can help bring kids into this as well. If you live in a house with children and are trying to help them to get organized, you know, allowing them to only take a short amount of time to work on something, with the deal being they have to actually work during the time that's allotted. But if they work consistently for 5 minutes and they've got permission to stop after five, that's very empowering to them to see what they can get done in that amount of time. And it also reminds us how much we can accomplish in just short spaces of time if we're concentrating on something that's important to us.
The why in the acronym STYLE is yes. It has a home, and you write that location is the key, and that every successful organizational system revolves around the concept of logical and consistent homes. Say a little bit about, yes, it has a home.
I have a little story to go with that one. When I was teaching this to kids, and I I started this with kids because I was working as an elementary school counselor at the time that I was beginning the thought processes for this book. So I joke that my students ranged in age from 8 to my oldest student being 86, because after I had retired, I was doing this in some community education classes as well. And so I had an 86-year-old lady in one of my classes. So from 8 to 86, I can't speak to under 8 or over 86 at this point, but at that range, I've actually had folks doing these things. But with both of those kids, even both of those age groups, even the kiddos, I would say, imagine that you've just come home from a warehouse store, Costco, BJ's, Sam's Club, whatever it is that's near you, and you're tasked with helping your parents to put things away, and you're putting everything away, and you're down to this last big jumbo package of toilet paper. And so you go into the bathroom, and you put it in the cupboard in the bathroom, and you get as much in as you can, and you still have rolls left. So you go out into the hallway, and you open the linen closet, and you put some more in there, but you still have like 3 rolls left, and you really want to go out and play. And you've got these 3 rolls left you've got to figure out what to do with. And you go back into the kitchen, and no one's in the kitchen, and you open the oven, and there's nothing in the oven. So you put the last 3 rolls in there and close the oven door and run out to play. And the kids would all laugh at this. And I said, that's how we talk about logical homes. You would not put the toilet paper in the oven. I don't think I've ever met an adult or a child who would store their toilet paper in the oven. But we often store things in out-of-the-way places that don't make any sense. We make it really hard to get the stuff that we need to get. So making sure that we're putting things in places that make sense, that are close to where we use them, that we put similar types of things together in the same drawer, so that when you're looking for things, we want to make it easy for ourselves to retrieve whatever it is we need to retrieve. So that's the logical piece. And then consistent is just what it sounds like. Once you've established the home, that's where it goes every single time. Whether it's the pottery bowl by the back door that your keys go into when you walk in the door, whether it is the drawer where all of the spoons that we use for cooking go, so that they all go in the same little section of the drawer. So if you're looking for a spoon to stir the pasta, you know exactly where to go. That you're consistently using a home that makes sense. And again, that takes us in the direction of a sustainable system, not just a quick fix that works for a short time and then falls apart and we have to start all over again.
And you suggest that we choose a space that's the right size also.
Yes, I think I said in the book about thinking about it as though you're buying clothes for children. When you buy, I can remember when my daughter was a toddler, buying shorts that I thought would last her for like 2 seasons or 3 seasons, because you can do that when they're little. But finding, you know, we don't want to put just one thing in a huge container. It's taking up a huge footprint that could be used for something else, especially if space is at a premium. So making sure that we're not cram and jammers, make sure that we're not stuffing everything into a too small space, but that we're also not wasting a lot of space. Maybe leaving a little room to grow, but not an enormous amount to grow, because too much room to grow, I think, just invites us to collect unnecessarily. And also the container takes up more space than it should be able to based on what we're storing.
It sounds like it's a process in which there's a lot of trial and error, and you also point out that accommodating another person's style doesn't mean you have to give up your own.
Yeah. It is absolutely a process, completely and totally a process, and a lot of trial and error. And it is, the challenge does come in when you're living with other people and they have different styles from yours. I mean, in a family, everybody could conceivably have 3 or 4 different combinations of the personal and organizational styles. And it's difficult to be patient with someone else when their style is different than yours. I drive my husband a little crazy with my piles, and he drives me a little crazy when he puts things where he thinks they belong in the kitchen. And I have to have a little discussion with myself about how I need to be grateful that he puts them away in the first place. But he is, I know I put it somewhere, and I am drop and run, or I love stuff, or I need to see it. Pardon me, got a little ahead of myself there. With the I need to see it thing, he'll put things away and think he's being helpful. And as soon as he's put it out of sight, then I'm frustrated by it. So there are challenges in trying to make all of these styles work together.
And again, as I said earlier, at the end of each chapter, you have a prayer, the one for this one, is smart organizers know when to ask for help. And you suggest this prayer: Dear Lord, thank you for a home filled with beautiful things and places to put them. the process of finding logical, consistent homes for everything I own feels daunting. Walk with me as I take things one step at a time and endow me with the patience necessary to understand and cherish the styles of those around me. And that can be part of the challenge, to understand and cherish the styles of those around me. And you write, keep in mind that this is a process. You keep saying that. We've been saying that all night. Mm-hmm. And processes take time. The goal here is to start with successes, consistent throughout the program, that you can keep and replicate the things you're doing well, while also looking for new ideas that fit your styles and take things to the next level. Brainstorm, try something new, assess its value, and keep it, replace it, and or replicate it. You're the boss. Slowly, one success, one home, and one container at a time, you'll build a system designed just for you. And let me read from Know Thyself. Homes are important. They provide warmth, comfort, and stability, and shape who we become. While the homes we select for our belongings have simpler requirements and can be changed more easily, they serve to protect the things that matter to us. If it's worth keeping, it's worth taking care of. God calls us to be faithful and prudent stewards of all that He has given us. After all, to attend to our belongings, our homes, and our relationships. Within the home that you have built, how will you be a good steward? How will you protect and respect all that God has provided? So it's a very practical exercise, but it's also a spiritual one too, isn't it?
It is, and I have to give a shout out to my team, the team at Our Sunday Visitor, who continued to take this book to the next level. This book was 12 years in the making in
Whoa.
Terms of the content. Yep. And in terms of the content, Rebecca Willen, who was my editor, Mary Beth Baker, who was above Rebecca, and Sarah Reinhardt, the three of them together with me, we worked as a team to kind of continue to take things to the next level. And the story that you just read came out of a conversation that Mary Beth and Rebecca and I had about, you know, we think we can maybe go one step further to raise the level of spirituality, to bring this to something that's a little bit more meaningful than simply the sorting your stuff piece of things. So I was blessed to have a tremendous team of people who were working with me on this book to consistently help to bring it to the next level, and it was a process. So it was wonderful that the prayers and things, some of those pieces were there, but to have someone else who could look at this and say, you know, I think we can go deeper here. I think there's another piece here. That was an absolute blessing to be able to have in bringing this book to a reality. And in terms of being able to improve the outreach, and as I said earlier, one of my goals is to help people to rediscover their lost organizational confidence. And I think that's something that we can find a whole lot more easily if we're praying about it at the same time. So being able to pull those pieces together was absolutely a team effort. My name's on the book, but there were definitely
sure.
team members who made this even better.
The L in the acronym STYLE is Let It Go. Tell us a little bit about this particular step.
That is often the hardest step, especially for those with an I love stuff personal style. And I spoke earlier in the program about when my daughter was little, having difficulty getting rid of things in a way she would allow me to get rid of things, but she didn't want to see them go, especially if we were throwing them away. And I think the piece that's important in terms of letting things go, well, there are a number of pieces that are important, but I think for me, one of the pieces that rose to the top was finding a new home for this, that where it would be appreciated as much as I appreciated it. I saw that with my daughter as well, that she didn't like to throw things away, but things that were still in good condition that someone else could enjoy, she was very happy to pass on to somebody else. So it's when we let it go, how are we letting it go? Is this something that can be recycled? Is this something that can be repurposed? Is this something that can be donated? Are there ways that we can let go of this in a way that makes us feel good about letting go of it instead of feeling bad about letting go of it? And also giving ourselves a break when we're not ready to let go of something. Again, as we've said throughout the program, it's a process. And there are times when we have an emotional attachment to something now that 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, that attachment might have changed. And it'll be easy to get rid of it in 6 months, but not so easy to get rid of it today. So being patient with ourselves when the reason that we have for hanging on to something is an emotional reason, when it brings back memories that we enjoy reliving, or, again, stages of life. We lost my mom to cancer 2 years ago, and it took me a while to be able to sort through a lot of the kinds of things that we brought back from the house. And there were things that I couldn't even begin to sort, let alone consider getting rid of initially. So we need to be patient with ourselves sometimes and understand that letting go is difficult, and letting go, hanging on to things just for the sake of hanging on to them, not necessarily a useful exercise. But when we're really struggling to let go of something, sometimes forcing ourselves to do it isn't the right step. Sometimes what we need to do is give ourselves some time to come back and revisit it later on.
Tell us a little bit about hoarding and why people do hoard.
Oh, and I'm a little out of my element here because I'm not clinically trained.
Yes.
But when we look at hoarding, when we look at anything that is diagnosable, anything reaching a clinical level, we look at it as interfering with daily functioning. If you go through the diagnostic and statistical manual of psychiatric disorders, at the bottom of every single one of them, it says something to that effect, to the along the lines of this interferes with daily functioning. Because we can all have a tendency to hoard a certain thing. My daughter hoarding the mulch in her pockets that we talked about earlier, which she no longer needs at this point in her life. But hoarding can be connected to a lot of things. It can be connected to anxiety. It can be connected to adverse childhood experiences. There are an awful lot of things at the root of hoarding. And when we talk about hoarding, we're talking about hanging on to things that has reached a clinical level. That is, it is interfering with our daily functioning. And when we think about hoarding, we think about, at its core, a difficulty separating trash from treasure, where it should be fairly evident when something is trash versus something is treasure. You and I could argue over whether or not my daughter's pastel portrait from when she was 8, whether it's trash or whether it's treasure, that's debatable. But when we start to talk about things like banana peels when we don't compost, or last week's trash, or 8 years of newspapers that pose a fire hazard, we're crossing a line in pretty much what the general population would consider trash. We're hanging on to still as treasure. So again, I'm a little out of my element here. This is something that if someone in the audience is struggling and thinking that perhaps they've crossed that line into hoarding, that's a discussion to have with a physician or a mental health professional, someone who is trained to diagnose something along those lines. But I think a lot of times, colloquially, when we use the word, we just talk about not being able to let go of stuff. But in its clinical sense, it's an inability that has deeper roots than that.
You have Lisa's List, Let It Go Habits to Develop One at a Time, and we won't have enough time to really talk about all of them. But again, the title of the book is Know Thyself. And our guest, the author, is Lisa Hess, H-E-S-S. And one of those 8 is a principle in my home, one in and one out. We've done that with Christmas decorations and other things. Well, if we're bringing one in, it's my sister's idea, then we're going to let it out. And then the E, just to jump us a little bit ahead, before we come up to the last segment of our program, is easy upkeep. And you write that easy upkeep is all about finding what works and replicating it. Easy upkeep includes troubleshooting and refining, replicating things that work, tossing out things that don't, and adjusting the things that sort of work. Bit by bit, we create a cohesive system that makes sense to us. And the end goal, a system that flows smoothly and requires minimal time and energy to maintain. So we're going to take this final break, and then we'll be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of Amplify with Lisa Hess, talking about her book, Know Thyself, The Imperfectionist Guide to Sorting Your Stuff. And there's much more in her book that we will not have covered by the end of the program. We'll try to touch just on some of it. For example, the chapter on organizing obstacles. She points out that there are different challenges that call for different solutions. Not enough time, not enough space, it's just not working, warring styles, seasons of the year and life, motivation of lack thereof, the procrastination sensation. But you don't understand, I'm just totally overwhelmed. Lisa, why don't you talk a little bit about those last two? The procrastination sensation, that's certainly one that a lot of us get involved in. And also, but you don't understand, I'm just totally overwhelmed.
Both of those actually tie back very well to take small steps, the TN style, because just starting someplace small is a key to getting started at all. The procrastination sensation, I had said a little earlier, when we finally get ourselves started and we set that timer for 5 minutes and we work, it goes off after 5 minutes and we think, well, I can keep doing this. It was the getting started part that was the hardest part. And that has something in common with a totally overwhelmed sense. You just look around and you don't even know where to start. Just start. Pick a spot, any spot. There's really not a science to getting organized, at least not in my world. I'm sure that there are organizers out there who will say there is a science to it, and this is the method that you follow, and this is the formula. I am not formulaic. I don't think that one size fits all. So I think you can start anywhere. You can pick anything. And for some people, the spot that they're going to start in when they're totally overwhelmed is just the first spot they lay eyes on. For others, it's going to be, okay, this is easy. I had a book event this afternoon, and I'm looking at my dining room table, and there are some empty grocery store bags sitting on my table. When I hang up from this program, that's the first thing I'm going to tackle. I know exactly where they go. I just didn't get to that pile. So I'm going to start with the thing I know I can manage in 30 seconds. Or it can be the thing that drives us the craziest. When we're totally overwhelmed, starting with the place that we feel we have the least control over, because anything would be a step in the right direction in that spot. But there's not a right answer to that. It depends on who you are, how much time you have, what else is going on in your life, how you feel about organizing. I mean, there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in getting organized and in our ability, our perceived ability or inability to do so. So in terms of the totally overwhelmed sense, pick a spot, any spot. Close your eyes and point, and wherever your finger points, start there. Just getting started is the hardest part, and when we get started, a lot of times we can wash that procrastination sensation right away because we've gotten started, and now, oh, I'm here, I'm doing this, I can do this. A lot of it is just, again, regaining that confidence and building the confidence one success at a time.
I keep going to Know Thyself because I continually want to bring God into it, as you have throughout the book. The chapter begins with a scriptural citation, as every chapter does. The one is here is from the book of James. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you meet various trials, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And then you write in Know Thyself in this particular chapter, making plans isn't a bad thing, but we need to remember that there's a larger plan at work, and it's not one of our own design. I know that God has an enduring plan for me, one that promises me not harm, but hope. But I sometimes, okay, often, lose sight of this in the crush of everyday to-do lists. Worse yet, I mistakenly feel a responsibility to be large and in charge on all my own and forget that I have a rock I can lean on. Organizing with kids, you indicate it can be a blast or a nightmare. Why is that? Why do you bring kids into this?
Because because a lot of times I'll have parents asking me, can I use this with my kids? That would be one reason. And another is that was one of the places I started. When I started looking at all of this and thinking about all of this, it was personal. And I wanted to work on my own organizational skills. And as I started to get excited and find things that work, I thought, why should my students have to wait until they're full-grown adults to be able to do this? And I've seen kids, I had said earlier in the program, feeling very beaten down by 10 or 11, already slapping the disorganized label on themselves. But it can be a chore because as parents, that large and in charge piece comes out a lot. I mean, we feel it's our duty to, and our obligation to guide our children, to teach our children, to show them the way to do things. But our children don't always want to do things the same way that we want to do things. There are times when we are right and we need to show them what the right path is. But when it comes to organization, they might have different styles and they may need a different approach. And very often type A parents become very frustrated because they've provided their children with all of the typical logical tools and all of the, they've taught them everything. And in a family with multiple children, if one child takes to it like a duck to water and another one is like, I'm not even in the pond. They're somewhere like off in the forest somewhere seeking their fortune. So it's trying to be able to find that balance as a parent, because we're sort of programmed to say, this is the way you do it. And when that's not the way our kids do it, we have to find that sweet spot and ask ourselves, what is it I'm trying to teach here? Am I trying to teach skills? Am I trying to teach that I'm right? Am I trying to teach a specific way to do this? Do I want to endow my child with confidence in his or her own abilities? And if we think about what it is we want to teach, that makes it easier to step back and say, okay, so if this is what I want to teach, this is the way I want to do it. And it requires a lot of prayer because we really have colliding styles often with parents and children.
Tell us a little bit about the tools for time management. You write that I'd be remiss if I didn't spend a little time talking about how to keep our lives organized. When it comes to that monumental task, two tools spring to mind, lists and planners. These two tools are among my favorites because they can so easily be personalized to meet our individual needs. Tell us a little bit then about these tools, lists and planners.
It's easy to think that all lists are created equal. A list is a bunch of items on a piece of paper. And that's true. That's what a list is. But we can also color code our lists if we need to see things. We can highlight our lists if we need to see things. We can put them in time order. We can look at our schedule for the day and use our schedule as the starting point for a list and add things to our to-do list around our appointments so that we're now looking at things chronologically. Or if we've had one of those days where we get to the end of the day and feel as though we have accomplished absolutely nothing, those are the days I like to do what I call a backwards to-do list, where you sit down and say, okay, so you have to have done something with your day. What did you do? And sit down and make a list of what you accomplished that day after the fact. It can seem like an exercise in futility, and for some folks it is. For folks who are very naturally productive, it's like, why would I sit here and write down everything I did? Well, for a busy mom in particular, or dad who's tended to someone else's, or a member of the clergy, who's tended to someone else's needs all day long and looked at their to-do list and saying, there's my list that I created this morning, believing that I could accomplish it, I can't check anything off it. What did I do today? Well, I got a phone call from a parishioner who was upset. I had my child fall off his or her bike, and I needed to give them some TLC and some bandaging and spend a little time with them. So the kinds of things that where our priorities lie really are important. We can lose sight of those sometimes when we're too list focused. So being able to sit down and say, okay, so here's what I did instead. I didn't check anything off the list I created this morning. I'm using the same one tomorrow, and here's why, helps us to feel a little more productive. In terms of planners, I absolutely love electronics and technology, but as an I need to see it person, I need paper and pencil planners. It's funny, during the break, I was pulling out my, on Sunday evenings, I take my calendar and I take a single sheet of paper and I write all of my appointments and things for the week out so that I don't miss things. And then I do plug in my to-do list around those things. And during the break, I'm like, oh, it's Sunday night, I should be doing this. Filling these things in during the break. I've learned what I need in a planner. I can pick up a planner. I'll drive my husband crazy because I could spend 45 minutes at a planner display. There can be only 10 planners there. I could spend 45 minutes going, well, this has this and this has this. What view do you need? Do you need a month at a time? Do you need a day by day? Do you need a place to keep notes? Are you someone who travels a lot? You need to keep track of mileage. What are the elements that belong in that planner? Does your planner need to be portable? You need to be able to throw it in your purse or stick it in your briefcase or put it in your back pocket or your jacket pocket and carry it with you wherever you go? Or are you a member of a big, noisy, happy family where everyone's going in different directions and you need just a huge one that takes the whole wall in the kitchen and is color-coded by family member? I love my electronics, but I can't do an electronic planner, and I often forget that they even exist because it's so out of my own style. But for folks who have their whole lives on their phones, that's where their planner is as well. So being able to look at lists and planners as the basics, the planners help us to keep track of appointments and things that are time specific so that we are where we're supposed to be, when we're supposed to be there. And the lists can be the companion to the planners that are all the things that we need to do that don't necessarily have a time frame attached to them. And then the trick is figuring out how we take things from the list and work them into the planner so that they do have a time frame or at least a day of the week attached to them, because if we don't do that, a lot of times they languish on the to-do list for a very long time.
Yeah, it has something to do with age, too, to some degree. I'm 79, so my planning has always been on paper, although I'm trying to use the electronic. And so it goes first to paper, and then I try to remember to put it on electronics on my iPhone. So, you know, so it gets confusing sometimes because I'll be out and the bishop will want to make an appointment or set up a meeting, and I've got my phone with me, but I don't have my planner with me. And so I'm trying now with the 79-year-old mind, trying to remember what it is that's, you know, what I'm doing on that particular day, that particular time. So I'm in that transition kind of area right now. Tell us a little bit about the pep talks, and let's talk about the pep talks and parting thoughts. I can't get started, I can't let it go, clear space doesn't stay clear, it's all too much, it's not working, but I'm not sure why. And these touch on some things that you've already addressed in the book, but it kind of brings everything together at the end, I believe.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm glad that it accomplished that for you in looking at that. When I read a book along these lines, something that is self-help or something that I want to take the lessons away from, I mark things up, but I will often go back and flip through and not be able to find what I was looking for. So my goal in this last chapter was, okay, so you've tried all this stuff, you're making some progress, but you're having one of those days where it feels like you've made zero progress, or you just need a little bit of a pep talk. You need to be reminded of what you know, or you need to be able to have just a quick, I need a 5-minute boost on how do I fix this thing that is stymieing me at the moment. And I wanted it to be for the folks who had made it all the way to the end of the book and wanted to pick it up again, but couldn't necessarily find what they were looking for. Hopefully that would be the shortcut chapter, that having read the book and looked at it and started to put some pieces into play, that they could pick it up at a later date and find what they were looking for quickly. I know, as I said, I get frustrated when I'm flipping back through the pages trying to find the particular section that really resonated for me. So I was hoping to make it a little bit simpler for folks who were hoping to do something like that.
I want to go a little deeper into this, but lest I run out of time, what about you and your husband? Are you compatible when it comes to organizing, or have you had to learn lessons yourself that led you to even help write this book as you did using your daughter as example?
We do not have compatible styles. He, as I had said a little earlier, he's, and I know I put it somewhere, person. He likes to have lots of clear spaces, and I like to have clear spaces, but I don't like to have clear spaces at the expense of forgetting to do things or not showing up where I'm supposed to be when I'm supposed to be there. So he's had to learn to be a little bit patient with my piles. I've had to learn to try to minimize my piles a little bit and find ways that I can adjust. For me, I mentioned early in the program, binders are not a good tool for me, but accordion folders are. So I can a lot of times transfer my piles from the table to the accordion folder so that I could put that on my desk in my office and there's not a pile that he needs to look at. I try to, I would like to say gently, he might not agree, reminding him of the locations of things, particularly in the kitchen. He's wonderful in that he does the dishes. I cook, he does the dishes, and he'll often unload the dishwasher and put things where he thinks they belong, and yes. Then I'll try to find them later, and I can't imagine what his thought process was as he was putting them away. We also have a height difference. I'm 5 feet tall, he's 6 feet tall, so what's a logical home for him? Yes. Yeah. What's a logical home for him is very different from what's a logical home for me. I was just joking about that this afternoon. I said I've been known to stand in the kitchen and say, I need a tall person. That would be anyone in my house besides me. My daughter is 5'8", so when they're both home, that's whoever gets there faster. Could you get that thing off the top shelf for me? I don't know why your dad thought that was a good place to put it. And it's a challenge. And it's funny in a way, but we've got, again, that height difference is a physical reminder of a difference, a uniqueness that we have been, shall I say, gifted with. It doesn't feel that way some days. To remind us that other people have different perspectives. The perspective of the kitchen from a 5 foot tall person's point of view is very different from the perspective of the kitchen from a 6 foot tall person's sure. point of view. And we were talking earlier about organizing with kids. Now drop it down. That little 4 foot person living in your house has yet a third perspective. So I need to be reminded that we literally don't see the world the same way. So we're not going to see the same world way. The same way style-wise either.
Yeah, we not only live with people like that, we work with people like that also.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always that need to come together. The scriptural citation that you use for the pep talks and parting talks is my bishop's Episcopal motto, nothing will be impossible with God. That's mm-hmm. a good way to begin to end it, to remember that we don't have to do this by ourselves. We heard in the scripture today that Jesus teaching his disciples how to pray and using the Our Father and mm-hmm. to remind them that he'll always be with them. And when we get to pep talks and parting thoughts and I can't get started, you recommend that where you get started matters less than getting started in the first place. And I can't let it go. You suggest to try asking yourself a few questions to clarify what's worth keeping and wasn't and what isn't. Is it hazardous, dangerous, or otherwise a threat to physical or emotional safety? Does it take up more than its fair share of space? Will someone else love this? Does it fit? Does it serve a purpose? And then clear space doesn't stay clear, and there are hot spots, you point out, that don't extinguish easily. Stake your claim, practice what you preach. Is it always the same counter? Is it always the same stuff? Will strategically placed containers solve the problem? And this next one is very important. It's all too much. You suggest us that we aim for progress, not perfection. Let's end there. Say a little bit about that. We just have a couple minutes, but aim for progress, not perfection.
In my freshman seminar, and actually in some of my other classes as well, I have my students read a book by a psychologist named Carol Dweck called Mindset. And it's that same thought that she echoes, that we don't, when we aim for perfection, we feel a need to protect ourselves from taking any type of risk, But when we're aiming for progress, we can see every step forward that we take. And we can even see the steps forward when we stumble as something that's good. And in our case, as we're speaking about this, when we take those steps where we stumble, that's the moment where we need to pray. And we need to say, I'm struggling with this. I need help. I know you're always with me. However our prayers come out, whether it is in a formal prayer or in just a desperate plea for help in the midst of not knowing where to begin. But that's one of Carol Dweck's mindset concepts, is aim for progress, not perfection. That looking at those small steps that we take along the way.
Wonderful guest. Wonderful book.
Thank you.
Lisa, thank you so very much for being here. I'm going to keep this book on the books that I keep and don't pass off to anyone else, because I think I probably need it better than anyone I would give it to. So God bless you and God bless your family. And thank you so very much for being here.
Thank you, Father Ron. Thank you so much for having me this evening. It was so lovely to talk about this. And I so appreciate all the work that you put into looking through this to have the type of conversation we had tonight. Thank you very much.
Well, it so shows that I believe in it, doesn't it?
Well, thank you. That's a lovely compliment. I appreciate that.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
We're coming towards the end of our program now. She writes, most of the time I seem to lean toward one stream or another. On productive days, I feel as though I've conquered time and management. When I string a few of these days together, I feel very virtuous as I check one thing after another off my list. And then the pendulum swings. All the energy I reveled in disappears, and I wrap myself in a woolen blanket of procrastination. Some days the blanket is warm, more warm than itchy, and I'm loath to relinquish it and face the things I should be doing. Other days, it's just itchy enough to spur me into action. Rest is important. Even the Lord rested. Don't forget, then, how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone. And come back next Sunday and amplify with us.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable, because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% off site-wide, plus an additional 10% off every order at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.